need expert financial advice you can both understand and trust on your savings and investments, retirement planning, equity release, or life and health insurance, talk to the experts at Facts and Figures Chartered Financial Planners. Phone 01233 722 922 or check them out at www.fffp.co.uk. Facts and Figures, independent financial advice everyone can follow. www.fffp.co.uk.
I'm off my jack, keep your hands off my stack.
Need inspiration? Join in the conversation with hashtag Daily Bread from Mike Waterton.
JobsInKent.com.
There are millions of small businesses in the UK, but in 2013, only 13,000 of them claimed back the cash that they were entitled to from the government. £46,000 on average, they say. If you've spent time and resources carrying out new product development, or working on innovative solutions, you could reduce your tax bill or secure a cash injection of up to 25% of what you've spent. Stuart did.
My company, Travel Welfare, have been developing new cost-effective software for issuing vouchers to delayed flight passengers. Rift Research and Development helped me claim tens of thousands of pounds back against the staff, time and material costs I invested. It was such a simple process and they completed everything for me, so I had nothing to worry about. I would strongly recommend Rift, and I'll be using them again.
To find out if your business is eligible, visit innovationreward.co.uk today. That's innovationreward.co.uk.
Channel Radio. Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on this Tuesday, April the 14th, with me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin. We have another lineup of fabulous guests to talk us through the last hour of the show. We've got a huge
wheeling heap. Them in and wheeling them out.
I know, we've got a huge heap of tweets as well, and I want to read some of those tweets out now. We've had a tweet from the Glenn Laker, and he says, "Hi Paul, can you give a mention of my Vera episode?
I love Vera.
On your Business Bunker show today, please. It's Sunday, 8 p.m. on ITV."
So he's doing so well, isn't he, Glenn?
He is. Glenn actually wrote that episode.
Yeah.
And we know Glenn very well. He's based over there in Whitstable.
Eats a lot of cakes.
He eats a lot of cake. Lucky boy.
He's married, of course, Sally Lake.
Sally for cakes.
He makes beautiful cakes. But he also wrote
Holby City.
Holby City.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Glenn's written this Sunday's episode of Vera, and that's on at 8 p.m. on ITV, so do please support it.
That's fantastic. You can have an hour of that, and then you can watch a little bit of Pole Dark.
Here we go again. No, I'm not even going down there.
See, all, you know, the women have just lit up. Look at Jane.
Yeah. All this bodice-ripping stuff is really annoying me now. The Community Show is a show that's going to be launching on Channel Radio next week, next Thursday, 10 till 11, fronted by Laura Burton-Lawrence, ably assisted by the Barrister Broker, and it's a show dealing specifically with charities, social enterprises, and the not-for-profit sector, which is kind of interesting because we're going to be talking about some of that later on in the show today.
You know,
but that's the Community Show starting next Thursday.
You know, I'm training him up next Tuesday, ready for Laura.
Who? Russell?
Russell, yeah, I'm training him up.
In what way are you training Russell?
Well, he will
making him cook you dinner.
Now, he will be on the Scoff and Quaff show as my co-presenter next Tuesday. And we've got Paella Fella. I like to say Paella. But I have to say Paella Fella. He's on. And we've got Colin on wine, from calling in from Moraira, our Spanish wine expert.
An advert for your rotten show?
Yeah, my fabulous show, the Superior Scoff and Quaff. And so Barrister Broker's cutting his teeth, ready for the Community Show on Thursday.
Cool. I've got two more shout-outs.
He washes up, you know.
Does he?
Yeah.
He cooks a mean curry. Russell cooked me a curry the other week. It was absolutely superb. It's one of the best curries I've ever had. It was really brilliant.
You going again?
Well, he hasn't invited me.
Well, did you wash up?
No, of course not.
Did you load the dishwasher?
No.
Did you clear your plate?
He hasn't got a dishwasher.
Hasn't he?
He refuses to have a dishwasher.
Really?
Yeah.
What does he do?
He washes it up by hand.
Does Laura do it?
He washes it up by hand.
Himself?
Himself.
Okay.
I just told you that. I've had a tweet from Jason Kay.
Oh, lovely.
He says, "Hi, Vanilla Web and Business Bunker. Can we have a shout-out, please? I can help with your social media, getting you more social. And don't forget our workshop with at UKV Solutions. And you can follow both of those on the Twitter. Jason's Twitter handle is _JasonKay. And you can follow UKV Solutions at that very name, which is at UKV Solutions. So do check those guys out.
And Laura Burton-Lotz has said that they're actually launching on the 30th of April, and that's 2 weeks from today.
Cool.
When you stopped flirting with the guests and waving at them and things.
They're launching on the 30th of April?
Yes.
She didn't answer my email.
2 weeks.
Is it?
Does anyone answer your emails?
No.
Bridger Howes have tweeted us.
Right.
Hello to you guys. They're saying, great show as always. Heard about the Soldier Box this week. Think Business Bunker listeners would be interested. And I'm looking at the Soldier Box now as we speak, and they are protecting your digital legacy.
Oh, right, okay. Is that in line with what Derek was saying from IPS?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, nice one.
Sounds interesting.
And we've had a tweet from Bank on Business, and they say, VanillaWeb, stands now available for Bank on Business Expo at London Biggin Hill Airport on Wednesday the 16th of September. Find out all about it at our website, which is bankonbusiness.co.uk. So do check that out.
Now, Nurse Liz, now you've shipped Derek out. I don't know if he's still there listening, but Nurse Liz has asked a question of Derek. She says, does the UK allow businesses to sell their client list during bankruptcy valuation? So we'll have to get back to you on that, Nurse Liz.
Do we allow businesses to sell our client list during bankruptcy
valuation?
Oh, I see what she's saying. What she's saying is, if your company goes bankrupt, is one of the assets of the business a client list?
Yeah.
I don't know the legal answer to that. I would guess not in this country.
We'll ask Derek.
Knowing the data protection rules, I would guess that that's probably not allowed.
But instead of guessing, shall we actually ask Derek?
Yeah, but he's not here, so we can't.
Well, should we tweet him?
I'll tweet him. Good luck with that.
Oh, he's not on Twitter?
No.
Isn't he?
No.
Oh, I'll have to talk to him.
Yeah. So we will try and find out, Liz, but I'm pretty sure that it's not allowed. I've never seen a client list included as an asset for sale, but you never know. Okay, it's an absolute pleasure now to welcome our next guest onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, the lovely Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hello, thank you.
And she's with Adam, and we're going to talk to you guys about something slightly separate. But Karen Clifford from Vision Communications, why don't you tell the listener a little bit about what you and your business do, because it's absolutely fascinating.
Okay, thank you. I'm from Vision Communication. I set up the business in September 2011. Reason being, I worked for a couple of companies teaching sign language, and it was basically just the basic level ones and twos, and there were so many people needing sign language in different areas that I set up my own business to help these people. We do level one, level two, pre-level three, and a level three class. That's quite basic.
Right.
But people wanted deaf awareness classes, so we started doing bespoke deaf awareness classes.
Okay. I want to ask you some questions about that. You may or may not know the answers. We'll fudge our way through that. As quite a few of the listeners know, I am president of the Kent Deaf Children's Society, and the whole deafness thing is something that's very close to me. What never ceases to amaze me is how many people actually are affected by this.
Yes.
And of course, it isn't only deaf people themselves. I'm what's called a coder, which is a child of a deaf adult, and of course that has a profound effect as well. It's an interesting subject, but do you know, you might not know, do you know how many deaf people there are in Kent?
In Kent? Mm, not offhand, no.
Okay. No. It's not something I know.
I thought you might know.
No. I did see a statistic that there are 1,400 deaf children in Kent, but of course, you know, people affected by deafness are a much bigger scale. But 1,400 is enough people.
That's a lot.
Anyway, it's a lot
of people.
That's
a lot of people.
And that's just people between the ages of 0 and 18, presumably. And I have seen in the past numbers of deaf people, and it is a considerable number of people. And, of course, deafness is also something that affects people as they get older in life as well.
Well, there's 1 in 6.
Yeah.
1 in 6 will have a problem with their hearing.
Right.
And do you think it's going to get worse because of, I mean, I'm always saying to my son, who's, you know, they go to these gigs, they're not called gigs anymore, he goes, Mom, but you know, the music is so loud.
Yes,
the music,
yes.
I've been to them and my heart actually is thumping from the vibe. Do you think there's going to be a
oh, I danced with her once.
Do you think there'll be a problem?
Yes, I think so. I think more children now are on all these Game Boys and not Game Boys, that's really old. Show my age now, you're, sorry.
You'll say Hit Parade.
Mate. Yeah, I must probably all the gadgets that they use now.
With headphones.
With headphones, yeah, constantly with headphones. Mm-hmm. I do think there will be a problem.
Okay.
It used to be 1 in 7, now it's 1 in 6.
Really?
So obviously. It's getting worse.
But then if you go back historically, in the olden days, let's say, there were workmen where there weren't the health and safety, where they would not wear earmuffs when they're doing the old jackhammer thing.
Yeah. Yep,
so I guess there's all, each sort of
generation and everything.
Thank you, yes. Has a problem.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. And the young people, there is more problem. Like I said, it's already getting worse. It's 1 in 6 now.
Okay.
And it's only going to get worse.
Absolutely. And there's a number of angles I want to cover with you, Karen, on this, obviously, and loads of questions that it throws up, but I want to explore some of these other things first, because my dad, who is deaf, and deaf from birth, actually ran his own business, which is highly unusual, and to some extent he used deafness to assist him with that.
He was a builder
mm-hmm. and he ran his own building business and it was no you never said that you didn't say you wanted that so he would use it to his own advantage to some extent, but that's really unusual for people to be able to do that. And of course he grew up in an age where there was absolutely no support whatsoever. You know, he was just told not to bother to go to school because there was absolutely no point. Yeah,
probably teased.
Sorry,
hopelessly teased as well at school.
Yeah.
I would think.
Although that was dangerous because my dad had 8 brothers and they were all deaf, so you don't want to do that because there's a few of them and they would kick your head in. But
does it only run through the male?
No. My grandmother was deaf too.
Okay.
But that aside, there's people. People in the deaf community have an awful lot to offer to society.
But
it's one of those things that it's one of the last disabilities, for want of a better word, that people don't really pay a lot of attention to because it's the one thing you can't see.
It's one of those hidden disabilities that
you just can't see. And therefore, people don't take it seriously and they think the answer to it is just a shout louder, which can be quite hilarious sometimes. But what you're offering in terms of signing, I want to talk to you about from a number of different angles, because it is crucially important, because especially young people are excluded, because quite often they're in an environment where there is no one of a similar nature, you know. So
that's right. Yeah.
You know, they are deaf and they have no one to talk to. Their contemporaries, their school friends, stuff like that aren't in the same situation. So by giving, you know, one of the things that I really loved is some of the events we've been to is when the kids are together and they can all sign with each other.
It's lovely. It's really lovely.
And they really pull some stunts as well, don't they? Because they'll talk about you and stuff like that because you don't know what they're saying.
That's it.
Which is really brilliant. How did you get into this?
Into my signing?
Yeah.
There's nobody deaf in my family.
Right.
I've got no deaf family. Nothing. It was an old school friend I bumped into, and she was teaching sign language. And I thought I'd just go and support her and have a look, see what it was all about.
Right.
So I went in and did a level 1 sign language, and I loved it. The first class, I absolutely loved it. Cheated a little bit because she was my friend, so everything she signed, I saw the first letter, knew what she was going to say because I knew all her family.
All right.
So I was top of the class. They all thought I was really clever, but I was just cheating, really. But I loved it, and I went on to do all my qualifications, became a communication support worker, and then I started teaching. She emigrated and said, do you fancy doing some teaching? And I thought, oh, I'll have a go. So I started teaching and loved it.
Right.
And then I had so many things I wanted to do, but had my hands tied with other companies. And again, that's why I set up Vision, so I could go out and do a lot more. And do a lot of, we do a lot of deaf awareness training in companies.
Okay.
For the same reason you've just said, people don't understand.
Sure. Do you find when you go into organisations, when they ask you to come in, are they just trying to fulfil their corporate social responsibility, or have they got deaf people working for them, or what inspires them to ask you to come in?
Usually they've got somebody, they've got a person that's there, and they start off, it's a little bit like, oh well, we've got to tick a box, but when we go in and they start understanding it, they love the course, and normally they say, oh, can you come back, do a little bit more, and it gives them a lot more awareness and they understand it a lot better. So, yeah, I would say to start with, it is normally, let's tick a box and this is what we've got to do. Sure. But they do really really enjoy it. And we normally get asked back time and time again to do more.
It's one of those funny things, isn't it? Because once it's something that you've started to learn, you suddenly realise there are some kind of benefits. It's almost a bit like tic-tac-men horse racing tracks. Yeah, you can communicate over distance that you couldn't with the spoken word sometimes.
Exactly.
From a point of view of learning, it's British Sign Language that you're teaching, because there are two or three different types of sign language, aren't there?
Yes.
You're teaching BSL. With BSL, is there something, a lot of people aren't going to kind of use sign language every day all the time. When you do a workshop, is there certain things that you can teach them so they can almost kind of hold just a very basic kind of conversation? How does it work?
Well, it can be, we bespoke it for anything. It can be if you're on a front line in jobs, or if you just need a few words, then we can just teach you as little or as much as you want to to learn.
So it isn't actually exactly like learning a foreign language, where you'd have to learn the structure, because it's a symbolic language. You can actually teach a subset of it, and you can learn a subset of it that can be quite powerful.
Oh yes, you can use all the nice, the greetings and things like that. It depends on how much you want to learn. Yeah. Most people start off with a little bit like that, then they get the bug for it. Once you start signing, there's a passion for it, they normally come back and then want to do a more structured level one,
and then progress.
And normally I do see all my students progressing lovely through level ones, twos, threes, and going on and doing jobs through finding, BSL.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Cool. What I want to do now is turn to your colleague here, Adam, and we're going to talk to Adam, because Adam has a really fascinating thing that he does. Adam's the choir master of a deaf choir. Are you not, Adam?
I am indeed.
And I saw Adam and his choir at an event that we had a few weeks ago at Moat Park Leisure Centre, and I was blown away by this. Why don't you tell the listener, Adam, a little bit about what it's like to run a deaf choir and how it actually works and what you actually do.
Okay, so the Vision Signing Choir started in 2012. Crikey, it's been 3 years. So 2012, Karen decided that she wanted to break into the Vision Signing Choir.
Right.
It started with literally 8 members, which increased to 12 members by the end of the first couple of weeks. It stayed 12 members for a quarter while, didn't it? And myself and a couple of the other guys are original members. We unfortunately lost our choir master back in October. Mm-hmm. And that's when Karen said to me, bearing in mind I was the only male in the group at the time, so I was a bit of a diva.
There's always a rationale in there.
I was the man at the back, in the middle, doing both parts when it came to joint, men and female parts.
I've got to tell you though, listener, I've seen this choir and there's some real babes in there. So,
I'll do my best. Yeah. I appreciate the compliment. It's lovely. But then Karen obviously asked me to take it over. So I took it over in October. We were doing our build up to Christmas songs. And this year's very exciting. We've got lots of upcoming performances, lots of competitions. So, that's pretty much.
For those people that haven't experienced the deaf choir,
yes,
tell them what actually happens, what a performance of the choir is like.
Okay, so bearing in mind, I was in the choir when I was actually learning my level 2 with Karen. So I'm learning BSL format and then I'm in the choir doing SSE format. So the choir is an SSE format style.
And what is SSE?
SSE is Science Supported English.
Right, okay.
So SSE would be, hello, my name's Adam.
Yeah.
Whereas BSL would be, name me, Adam.
Right, okay.
So it's completely the opposite. The reason we use an SSE format is because of the fluidity of the song
yeah.
and the words that go into it, so it makes more sense okay. for the watcher and the listener.
Yep.
I've lost my chain of thought now.
No, I was asking, sorry, that was my... So into
my SSEs and BSLs and SEEs then.
Exactly. No, I was asking you how a performance unfolds. Having seen, you know, a lot of people out there won't have seen it and they won't know exactly what happens, you know. So you've got a choir and a choir are performing.
That's right.
A
so
number.
We're an SSE format. And we will learn the signs to the words in a song.
Right.
So we learn the lyrics off by heart. Well, we try our best anyway, because obviously it's really important that we continue with the lip pattern for people to watch.
Mm.
So we're really a total communication organisation. And then we put it to music and we try and get the timings down. And obviously us talking now is very quick, very rapid.
Yeah.
But if you try signing this at the same pace...
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot longer. So you can imagine there are certain signs that we have to drop that don't really mean anything as long as the meaning of the song comes over
yeah.
and it's translated, you know, to the best it can.
It's not a simple process, is it?
No, it's not.
When you think about most popular songs, you know, there's a lot of slang and a lot of
yes.
innuendo and all kinds of things in there. And as you say, you've got to get the timing exactly the same because when the choir are performing, they have the backing track of the original music there, and they're signing what they're doing. So it is a really difficult task.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because we're actually off to Jersey in November this year, and we're going to be participating in the first, our first competition for the signing choirs, and that attracts, you know, 30, 40, 50 signing choirs from all over the all over the UK, and they all go to Jersey and they compete in a signing choir. And our entry this year, I mean, obviously I can't give away too much, but our entry this year does actually have a rap element, which I actually had a lot of sleepless nights over translating. I didn't. Yeah.
How'd you sign up? No, we won't.
Yeah, no. Yeah, definitely. But no, it's very time consuming. I spend a lot of nights going through the signs, making sure they're in the correct context. Then we go back. We only practice 1 hour once a week, and for the choir that turn up every week on time, it can be quite painstaking, but the reward at the end of it to watch them all seamlessly in time with each other, and it's just amazing.
Absolutely.
It's just an amazing performance. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're a completely non-profit organisation with regards to the Vision Signing Choir, all our profits or any money that we make goes directly to the dogs for... hearing dogs for hearing dogs for deaf people.
Right, okay, so all your profits from you make from that go to the hearing
dogs. Yeah, because obviously we sponsor our own hearing dog called Berry at the moment, and he's doing really well.
Cool.
So give us a little example of a hearing dog and what he does or she does.
Well, a hearing dog basically will be there to support someone who is deaf.
Yeah.
And will stop at a crossing, for example. Mm. You know, when you've got the green man that says walk, and then you hear that beeping.
Yeah.
Obviously, for a deaf person, they can't hear that beeping.
Yeah.
So the hearing dog will support them in that. With regards to if a doorbell rings, so that if the postman's got a delivery and they can't fit it through the postbox, the doorbell will ring, the dog will come and let the owner know.
Mm. Telephone as well.
Telephone, yeah. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of gadgets out there that do the same thing.
Yeah.
But obviously...
Yeah,
there's so much more to a dog.
Cool. Hey, listen, guys, we could talk about this forever, but
we could.
Sadly, we're running out of time. Give us a shout for your website for Vision Communication.
Okay, the website is www.visioncommunication.org.uk.
Cool. And you have a Twitter handle as well?
Yeah, Twitter us at BSL Signing.
Fantastic, Karen, thank you. Do you have a website for the choir at the moment?
No, it's the same website. If there's any inquiries or questions, admin@visioncommunication.org.uk is our email address.
Fantastic.
Just ping us an email and we'll get back to you.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you very much. Karen, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure to hear from you.
Fascinating.
Good luck in Guernsey, was it?
You're going?
Jersey, yeah.
Good luck in Jersey with the singing choir, signing choir competition. We'll be rooting for you. And I can't wait to find out where you're going to rap. Cool. Thank you so much, guys. Absolute pleasure. You can read one email, then we'll talk to our next guest.
Kent and Medway Company of the Year final is 2015. This is on Thursday, the 30th of April. It's at Oakwood House, Oakwood Road, Maidstone. That's ME16-8AE. You've got, at 5pm, you've got trade stand previews. And at 6pm, you've got company presentations. Now, this event brings together, this is from Bill Fox, who's the chairman of the Kent and Medway
FSB.
Federation of Small Businesses. So he's saying that this event will bring together student groups across Kent who have formed a young enterprise company this year and won their area final. It'll be a great opportunity to meet some of the young people that benefit from the programmes and also to speak to them about their enterprises and employability skills and attitudes that they develop, says Bill Fox. To reserve your place, you can email Vanessa with two N's, so it's V-A-N-N-E-S-A, .johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N, at y-e.org.uk. And as I said, that's Thursday the 30th of April at Oakwood House in Maidstone, 5pm.
Cool. Thank you for that. We've had a tweet from Eden Valley Chamber. It says, hi, Paul and Jules. Can you give our event a shout-out? 23rd of April, hosted by TYP Limited. That's Target Your Potential. Hosted by TYP LTD on the Twitter, and it's in Edenbridge, and they say you can DM him for more, or them for more details, and to DM them you need to follow them, and their Twitter handle is EV Chamber. That's the Eden Valley Chamber, and they have an event on the 23rd of April. We've also had a tweet, and these guys have tweeted a few times and I always miss it for some reason, so luckily I haven't missed it this
really?
time, and that's from Caroline and Liz, the organic sisters. Yeah, Riverford Organic, and they say, please remind the listener we deliver organic fruit and veg and more to offices throughout Kent and Medway.
And very nice.
I just don't,
you'd have been watching my Twitter, I did a lovely salsa with their tomatoes yesterday.
You did mention
nice.
That earlier.
Yeah.
Four or five times.
Hey, we've had a lovely little Spanish Twitter, which I can't really understand, but it says,
Hasta la vista, baby. Is that what it says?
Encuentra los mejores restaurantes de tus mediación con la nueva app gratuita Rank Eating. I don't know what that means. Something about restaurants.
Yeah, I think you just read out a rap song in Spanish.
And Nurse Liz, who's listening in Maryland, was listening to you guys, and she said she sent you a YouTube link, which you can look at later. I've tweeted it to you. And she says, an entire neighbourhood learnt sign language to talk to a deaf man. And there's a YouTube link, so check that out later.
Oh, fabulous.
On.
Thank you.
Very interesting. Thank you, Nurse Liz.
It's now an absolute pleasure to welcome back into the Small Business Base Camp on kentbusinessradio.co.uk on the Business Bunker Show, the lovely Jane Ollis from Rift Accounting. Hi, Jane. Welcome back.
Afternoon, Paul and Jules. Lovely to be here again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you.
Beautiful sunny day down
gorgeous
there.
Gorgeous day as well, isn't it?
We've got our socks off, haven't we, Jane?
We've been slowly stripping off here.
It is one of the perks. We're going to talk about now this afternoon social enterprises, and interestingly, having talked to the guys with sign language and stuff like that, and I was talking to them outside before the show, and I was trying to explain what a social enterprise was badly, but of course that's what you're here to do.
Thanks.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about social enterprises, how we set them up, what they are, and how we can kind of develop them.
Thank you, love to. And it was lovely to hear your story about your social enterprise. And it is a real, you know, to sum it up, it's about solving a problem. And it's a problem that might be an environmental or a social problem, and you want a structure through which to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, a social enterprise itself isn't a legal form. It is a it is a way of working. So to set up a social enterprise, if you think there's something really passionate that you want to do something about, and in fact the guy that invented or coined the phrase social enterprise was a guy called Peter Drucker in the 1980s.
Oh really? I wasn't aware of that.
And okay. He was very passionate about the power of business to do good. Mm. It's about the force of business to solve problems that actually governments, charities, public sectors can't always do, and you need a business entity. So I'm, you know, my topic for the week, Paul, is about the power of business to do good.
Yeah, absolutely.
The power of business to solve problems. Mm. And a social enterprise is a vehicle through which you can do that. Mm. I'd say it's not a legal entity on its own. You can choose any variety of format that you want to do. But what's really important, if you choose to set up a social enterprise, you set up a company that's limited by shares or guarantee, something like that. But it's about how you define its purpose. You really need to be clear about what is its social purpose. What's the problem it's trying to solve? Mm. And you can do that by being clear about it in your articles of association. And you need to be clear about what you plan to do with profit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, every business, in my mind, should make a profit.
Every organisation should make a profit.
Absolutely.
It's one of my pet things, this.
Yes.
People have, especially at the moment when we're heavily involved in politics with an election coming up, people seem to have this odd view of a profit. A profit is just an excess of cost of income over costs. And there isn't a single organisation, including the government, that doesn't actually need to do that.
Correct.
The government doesn't do it.
It does it very badly.
It does it very badly, but it actually does need to do it. You know, otherwise we go broke because if we don't have a profit, we don't cover our costs.
Absolutely agree. What the exciting thing with a social enterprise is what it chooses to do with that profit and how it defines that. Mm. Some social enterprise might decide actually what we want to do is scale up. And that's the fantastic thing a business can do and that governments often can't in terms of solving social or environmental problems. So it can put its profit back into its business, or in your case, you gave your profits away to support a listening dog. And that was your choice and how you choose to support the mission. It has to be connected.
Right.
So that in a little summary is what a social enterprise is about. Another nice way to describe it is a change maker. What you're trying to do is, and this is what Peter Drucker calls it, is you're acting as a change agent.
Right.
And I like that. It's about using a business to solve a problem and driving change.
Can I ask you a question there, Jane, about profit treatment? Mm-hmm. Is there a tax treatment for social enterprises that is different to a profit-making company?
No, because it's the same.
It's exactly the same. Yeah. So you're going to pay corporation tax on the profits.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are a number of other structures you can choose. Community interest company, which again is liable for corporation tax.
Yeah.
There are cooperatives. All of these are going to be liable to pay taxes on them in the same way an ordinary business would be.
Okay. So the interesting thing is a social enterprise, in terms of the way that it sets itself out, is basically there to send a signal that we want to do something here. We want to make a difference here.
Absolutely. There's a problem that we want to solve and we want to use a business to do it. I'll give you an example of one of my favourites. Mm. It's a lovely company based in Southampton called Who Made Your Pants? Whomadeyourpants.co.uk.
I'm liking that already.
And it was set up
Come on, Jules, who made your pants?
Who made your pants?
I know who made her pants. It was the Marden Marquis company made her pants.
Do you know, I know you so well, I just knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But the lovely story about this was a couple of ladies who really wanted to provide a way to support lots of migrants who moved into the city, who were looking for quality of work, who were looking to be treated properly, trained properly, have a career path. And so they set up this lovely business called Who Made Your Pants, and they purchase all of their linen or fabrics from offcuts from big producers, and they make the most beautiful pants. The pants are all got named, and as you go in, you start with a basic pant. I think it's called Amelia. And actually, the ladies then go on to create and design their own pants.
Right.
And actually have man pants. So
Blimey.
You can actually go and buy your man pants, Paul, if you want.
So they must be ones with holes at the back, you know, for emissions.
I don't want to go there.
I'm just saying.
Go and do have a look at their website. But they've actually set it up now as a cooperative with a number of people who obviously have members and own that business.
Right.
But that's a lovely story of let's solve a problem about providing a great opportunity for women and a place for them to work and grow and be trained and get skills. A nice story.
It's interesting you say that. Some weeks ago, months ago now, we had a lovely couple on here, Steve and Annie.
Yeah.
Lowe from Elcetex, who are one of the fastest growing businesses
in
Kent. And of course they're a textile based business, and they had a factory in Pakistan, and they on a whim just decided to give the factory to the workers in Pakistan, which was an absolutely beautiful thing to do. And that's a kind of similar kind of story to
and
that.
And you can still hear that programme on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
You can indeed. So, as a social enterprise, there's nothing really that says the structure is any different to any other kind of business. When you set up a social enterprise, do you have to, apart from the articles and associations, we'll talk about that in a minute, because a lot of people don't understand that when they're setting up a business either, just in general. Is there any, there's nothing that identifies it as a social business other than what you say?
Other than what you say and you define in your articles. There is a community enterprise mark, I think it's called, and don't quote me on that. So if you want to, you can actually look for a mark that will qualify you. If you're really, really passionate and you want to lock all of those assets into your business, a community interest company is really the most recognisable form for a social enterprise. But that comes with a little bit more regulation and, I say, a lock on any assets that you might have in that business as it grows.
Can we? I don't want to put you on the spot with anything, but can we just kind of give an overview of a CIC and exactly what it, how it differs from a? You've got a charity on one end and a company limited by guarantee on the other end. Where does a CIC fit?
A CIC is a private company, so that's the first point. So you set it up the same way that you would normally. There is another layer, though, which you have to, another step you have to go through with an organisation called the CIC regulator. And that's, again, about having another layer of documentation that really defines your purpose, talks about asset lock, this thing about asset lock, which is to protect that company as it grows and to ensure that you can't just, you know, flog it all off.
Right.
and you have to do an annual report then to the CIC regulator. But in terms of access to funding, you know, either your social enterprise or your community interest company both normally fall into the same sort of band, so you'll still be eligible for going for some grant funding if that's what you're looking for, to get yourself up and running.
And that's something that people don't always understand, that there is quite a bit of public money available for social enterprises of all kinds, but you have to be structured in the right way to actually participate in that kind of thing. I know that it isn't particularly what you were coming to talk about, but you mentioned it in one respect, and it's worth talking about when starting a business of any kind. Can you just give us an overview of what the articles and association of association actually mean? And because so many people just don't think about this.
Really, really simply, they're just a set of documents that describe how you're going to govern and manage your business. And that really is it. How you will work, how you will make decisions to ensure that you've got everything in place to make sure you're doing everything legally. And you've got a process if you come across a problem with between two directors or that for how you solve that. So it's really simply a set of governing documents.
Do you also specify what industry you're in? So you name your SIC code.
You can describe exactly what you're about, and the more detail you give to that, especially in a social context, is going to be more powerful for you.
I was not aware that it was Peter Drucker that coined the term social enterprise. For those of you that don't know, Peter was a very well-known management consultant and management guru that wrote many fascinating books on business and leadership. And I was not aware that he turned.
And he set up a fascinating organisation called Ashoka. And we've got all the details of all the funding websites I'll talk about be on our website, the riftaccounting.com website, later today. But Ashoka was an organisation in particular he set up to invest in what he calls change makers. You know, he wants to invest in people who want to change the world through using business.
Ashoka, A-S-H-O-K-A.
O-K-A.
I think I've heard of that in some respects. So, social enterprise. I mean, from your point of view, Jane, as accountants at Rift, are you guys seeing an increase in social enterprises? I mean, is it something that more and more people are doing?
We haven't in particular, but we haven't particularly gone out to that market and said, hey, guys, we're here. But I think the growth of social enterprise and community-based organisations is spiralling in the UK. I tried to find some facts before coming down today. It's really hard to find.
It is, actually. I tried as well.
But the latest figures suggest about 70,000 social enterprises in the UK, and they're contributing about £18 billion to the UK economy. So that is a massive contribution to UK GDP. Interesting, a lot of them are new. So a third of all social enterprises are less than 3 years old. So you can really see this upward trend in people wanting to use business as this way of solving community problems. And there's a lot of support out there for doing that from a variety of organisations. And some really fun funding models. That's a nice tongue twister, isn't it? And the Hastings Pier is a really nice example of a community project.
Right.
£12 million project to restore Hastings Pier. Massive amount of work to raise a lot of that through some public funding, heritage funding. But the last amount they raised through community shares.
Right, okay.
There is $500,000 through issuing community shares, so everyone in the community could purchase and
have
be involved
piece, yeah.
and have a little piece of that.
Yeah.
So you've got some very interesting new funding models, and investors are interested in them. There is appetite
Absolutely.
From mainstream investors to invest in social enterprise capital projects as well through using bonds and a variety of other mechanisms. So.
Very inspiring and very exciting.
It is. It's a great change.
It's really interesting. I'm a big history buff, and I don't normally read this kind of history, but I was reading it the other day about the rise of the joint stock company. And, of course, at the invention, at the Industrial Revolution, and at the same time when joint stock companies were first coming into being, the whole stock exchange thing was a radically different beast to what it is today. In those days, a stock exchange was there for people in the community to invest in a business. Now, some of them were well dodgy because they involved sailing to the Caribbean and robbing Spanish boats of their gold and stuff like that. But having said that, that was the original purpose of a joint stock company, was exactly what it said on the tin. Mm. We will raise money from the community in order to undertake a project. Mm. Over the years, that kind of fell away, and now the stock exchange is a place where you buy and sell shares in well-established companies. And in fact, you can't even trade your shares until you are established and approved. So it's kind of changed its whole ethos 360 degrees. But what's interesting is how we're now starting to come back towards community-based companies.
And community ownership. Actually, another nice story picking up on that point. I'm picking on a little food topic because I think that's important when you come onto the business bunker.
Yeah, up Jules's ears.
Is one of the winners of this year's Social Enterprise Awards was a company called Divine Chocolate.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And I've forgotten the name of the
I
lady
have
who established it.
I've partaken quite a lot of Divine
have
Chocolate,
you?
I believe. Yes.
Well, the story is lovely in that the lady who set it up wanted local cocoa farmers to actually have ownership of the company.
Mm.
So 45% of the company is owned by the farmers themselves, and it allows them to return and reinvest those profits from that into their local community.
Mm.
So it's again just another nice way of
giving back,
supporting sustainable communities and giving back.
I absolutely, and it's as you say, Jane, it's about people realizing that business is a powerful force for doing things. And there's too much negativity heaps on businesses where people don't really think this through very clearly. But on Jules's show, especially because producers and things like that appear on Scuff and Quaff show quite a lot, you had a lady a few weeks ago that was a nut importer.
Yes, I did. Kate Gaskell.
Yeah, Kate. And she, you know, I was having a long conversation with her. She'd had a very senior job as a corporate buyer in one of the big institutions, you know, one of the big firms. And then she started her own business importing peanuts, basically. But fair trade, growers' cooperatives in Africa and various places that she was sourcing these things. And that whole kind of thing has so many levels of effect socially, in terms of the producers' countries
and their families,
and it's building an infrastructure in underdeveloped countries. It's giving them a safe way to sell into Western markets, and it's giving them a head start that they didn't really have before.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those I count as social businesses because that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in it to make a profit. Do you know? It's really interesting. I know very few business people that actually went into business purely to make a profit. That isn't really most people's motivation.
There is this misconception that people go into business to make money and buy fast cars.
Yeah. We buy fast cars.
And that might have been
I don't
the
have
wrong
a problem with that.
But having worked with loads of Kent businesses,
I
can't think of one where that's been their motive. And in fact, in terms of delivering social impact, they employ local people, they support local football teams, and, you know, small businesses are a real force for good.
Yeah, absolutely they are. Absolutely they are. So, if anybody's out there thinking, I want to start a business, I want to go into business, but I want to make a difference, I want to do something, you know, a bit like Karen and Adam here, we know, it's not the kind of thing that you would normally think of as a business, you know, let's do something for the deaf community, you know, people don't have those kind of ideas normally, it takes a very special person to have that kind of idea, and an even more special person to make it happen.
Passion.
Yeah, it's a passion, and so if there's anybody out there that's thinking, you know, I'd like to be able to do something to help with this problem or that problem or to find a solution to this, that or the other, what would you say to them in terms of finding out about social enterprises and how to do it? Is it worth coming to talk to you and just saying, look, you know, this is our ideas, how do we structure ourselves?
Yep. Please do drop us a line at info@riftaccounting.com or tweet us, because we can always just help think through that idea, because passion is really important, but then you need to balance that with doing some sound business planning. At the end of the day, you're going to be running a business, so a business plan and doing all the normal things that you would do when you were setting up a business are going to be really important. But we can also help you think about where to go for funding, because if you are a genuine social enterprise, there are places where you can get grant funding and some fabulous, fabulous help to get you to test your idea and then to think about how you want to scale that up. As I say, we're going to put a list of funding websites on the riftaccounting.com website and Business Bunker website this afternoon. So do have a look through those as well, because there is support out there and support for you to be innovative. And one of the facts I wanted to bring and share today was a really good survey that was done. It was 2013, so a couple of years old, looking at innovation in social enterprise. And I have to say, innovation was higher as measured by the number of new products and services that were being delivered than your stock standard SME. And I think that's because people are driven by passion and desire to make a change. And it's actually the level of innovation in social enterprise is right up there and very exciting.
Yeah, there aren't many small businesses where you have to redesign a rap song and the cadence of a rap song to fit a particular issue, is there really? Yes. Where you have to find a sign language for no, you're absolutely right, and it is about passion, but to my mind, business is about passion anyway. Whatever type of business you're going to go into, you shouldn't really do it unless you're passionate about what you're doing
and you're solving a problem. I think any business is there to solve a problem
absolutely
that your customer might have. In this case it's about solving a problem that's going to make the world a better place to live.
Absolutely. And I'm really interested as well, because it's not something that people have thought about a great deal. And there are some political things going on at the moment because of the election coming up, where people are talking about lots of different things in the economy and the world of work. But something you said earlier, which was about you were talking about community shares, but I'm also interested in how come more businesses don't start out by offering employer shares as well, you know, employee shares too. So, and that's something that I think may be worth exploring at a later date as well, because it's an overlooked kind of thing.
It has, particularly because there's a legal framework for them to do that. It's been the take-up has been quite low in the UK. I'm not sure of the reasons why, but it sounds like a good topic to come back and...
I think it would be, because, as you say, I mean, there are other places around the world where it's much more prevalent than it is here. And I suspect that really a lot of it here is a lack of awareness as much as anything. So I think that's something that we could explore as well in part of this general, you know, business as a community asset type of approach, which is really important. And of course, any workforce that has a vested interest in the business that they're working for succeeds. You've only got to look at organisations like John Lewis Waitrose, which is a partnership where all of the people that work for that store have a share in the store.
A business is made up of people.
Absolutely. Jane, thank you so much for coming in again. It's a pleasure as always to talk to you.
Always lovely to be here.
You can find out, there's so much stuff on the Rift website. There's blogs, there's information, there's downloadable resources. There are all kinds of guides and resources on doing all kinds of things like VAT and...
all the dull stuff.
Yeah, there's... Well, you know, but...
But important.
All the stuff that's important that you need to know about if you're starting a business, even if you're in the early stages of running a business, and dare I say it, some of you that have been in business a while need to read some of these as well. Yes. All those resources are free. They're all downloadable. There's tons of stuff on Rift's website. Do check it out. Do regularly look at it as well, because you quite often talk about events and stuff like that. And I just want to give a shout out for an event we're doing together.
We're going to have fun.
We're going to have some more fun. We had a little practice at the West Kent Business to Business Show, but we're going to go for the big one on May the 13th at the Kent
2020
event, which is kind of like the centrepiece of Kent business, really.
That's
isn't
it? Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday, indeed. It is a Wednesday, and it is taking place at the Detling Showground. Mm-hmm. And we are going to have a pop-up radio studio.
Yes.
As part of the Rift offering at the 2020 show, we're going to be setting up a base camp. We're going to have llamas, and we're going to have alpacas, and we're going to have tents, and we're going to have. No, we're not. I'm making all
so
that
come
up.
Along and be interviewed.
Yeah, but
I don't
you
know,
can
you might
come...
be surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's been
yeah, absolutely. Do come along and say hi to the folks from Rift and say hi to us on the Business Bunker. And as Jill says, get interviewed.
Yeah.
We love interviewing people and things like that.
Yeah. You and do that... with wine, generally.
Sorry?
You do with wine, generally. You interview people, ladies.
What's she trying
at
to say?
At the last exhibition, you were off while I was working, drinking... Well, you weren't drinking
I wasn't drinking wine. I'm teetotal.
The lady with you, you were proffering her wine while I did all the work. Jane's my witness. She was right opposite me.
And there was really? Jules with a bad cold all day, struggling
little
on.
Little lem sip, yeah. Some Barocca.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Don't you remember?
I'm not talking about when that.
You remember the cupcakes?
Of course, we did put some cupcakes away. We did put some cupcakes away.
We went round every stall.
And had a cupcake. We were cupcaking for England that day, I can tell you. But on May the 13th, Wednesday, May the 13th, come along, 2020. It is free to get in, isn't it?
There's free no to get in. Yeah. And if you register, I think it's before the end of this week, you might get some free Elton John tickets.
Wow.
There you go.
Don't forget, Elton John is playing in Kent at Detling at the showground this year.
Yeah, wow. Fantastic.
There you
that'd
go.
Be great.
So do come along. Come along to the stand. Say hi to the lovely folks from Rift. Say hi to us on the Business Bunker.
Yes. Pop
up radio
show.
Huh?
See us in person.
No, I don't want to do that,
what
do they?
What should we wear?
No, I don't
something
want to do that.
Something orange.
Something orange. We can like spray tan. Good idea. Cool. Yeah, do come along to that. Jane, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker. As always, it's an absolute pleasure to see you, and we look forward to your next appearance. And yeah, we'll talk about share ownership at some point as well of employees, because that's a fabulous topic. We got dozens of tweets, and you got some emails left to read, I think,
yes,
Julesy.
I'd just like to say a big hello to Dialer Brain, who is saying, great advice from Jane, Rift Accounting as usual. Thank you to us for bringing it. Chris Pollard has arrived home after Scoff and Quaff, eating all those pies. He's got back. And then there was something about Herne Bay that I wanted to read out.
I've got that. I've just seen it come up.
Chance of a shout out for Herne Bay FC sponsorship and advertising opportunities. So if you want to sponsor or advertise, call Andrew on 07747114627.
Cool. Thank you for that.
Is that what you were just about to say?
I just found that. I was just going to read it, but you've read it out, and now that's absolutely fine.
Lovely. And also there's a Twitter Academy, which is, when is it? It's on the 1st of May. It's Jason Kay, UKV Solutions. You can find out more from him by mobiling 0796 164 6664. But it is the 1st of May at Bridgewood Manor Hotel.
Fantastic. Have you got many emails left to read?
Loads, hundreds.
If you want to rifle through and find some of the ones that are time sensitive, i.e. that we need to read out, that would be great.
Okay.
We've got dozens of tweets still coming in. I'm sorry we're not going to get round to all of them because we are fast running out of time. There's loads of interesting people coming in and loads of new listeners as well.
Yeah. Hello to BNI, the Weald Valley. They're retweeting madly. And, of course, Dialer Brain. Did I mention them? Yes, I did.
You did.
So, look, this is on the 13th and 14th of May at the XL in London. And they're saying, might you miss the UK economic boom? The next 12 months will define your next decade. So do not sit still and watch everyone else cash in. Take action and be positive. Buy a business. Expand your business. Take on more staff or get new clients. So what they're telling you to do is simple. They say the next and best chapter of your business will start on the 13th and 14th of May at the business show at the XL in London. You need to go onto the Great British Business Show .co.uk to find out more. But there's 250 seminars and 350 exhibitors and also lots and lots more. And details will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Thank you for that. I just want to give another shout out, because I don't think I've mentioned this enough.
Zumbathon.
There's a Zumbathon happening. And you got to sponsor me. So do sponsor me. It's UK Virgin Giving, Paul Andrews BB. Go through, sponsor me.
How long does it take? Do you have to click on lots of stuff? Or is
No. It's really easy. It's okay. One click. It's one click onto my page. You just put your credit card details in, type in 1,000 where it says number, and press send. And it's all done.
Okay, when's the London Marathon?
Fairly soon. Okay. If it's not this Saturday, it's the Saturday
so
after.
Another one is Hamish Jack, who is a trustee of the Kent Deaf Children's Society, KDCS. And he's running on behalf of his daughter Catherine. He wants to raise as much money as he can. So please, could you also go to UK Virgin Money giving.com/HamishJack.
It's one of those things.
I gabbled that a bit.
No, that's fine. We have mentioned it a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, and we will do that up until the time that Hamish takes part in that. Just on a sensible note, I know as business people, especially at the moment, we get loads and loads of requests for charitable donations and raffle prizes. And loads of people asking us to support their Kickstarter projects and their crowdfunding projects and stuff like that. We can't do everything, we realise that. But it's surprising, you know.
Well, the chance to see you in a tutu doing the Zumba.
It doesn't happen very often.
Come up that much.
It really doesn't happen very often. And seriously, if you could just donate £1, that's all I'm asking. You know, we're not asking for huge amounts of money. It's just £1. Because if everyone donates £1, we raise truckloads of money. It really is that simple.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be an awful lot. It's just the gesture. So do that for us. I know you will. And we've had some fabulous, generous donations already. So big thank you for that.
And thanks to our sponsors today, who are...
IPS.
Thank you.
Yeah. See, you didn't know. That's why you dragged straight
to Stevie. You got the old
body language. Yeah, it was... Go on, sort that one out, Paul, because you won't remember. I do remember who it was.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. It's
2 hours ago.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about them a lot, wasn't it? Information Protection Solutions, IPS. Information-protection-solutions.co.uk is their website address.
Threading with them.
They currently don't have a Twitter handle. Derek is working on setting one up, but they currently don't have one. Right, you can do one more email.
Okay, the importance of collaboration between business and science. That's the launch of the World Nano Foundation. Now, let's find out. You need to go to the World Nano Summit. I guess you would Google that. Mm-hmm. Number of thought leaders sharing revolutionary insights and discussing the benefits which the foundation can bring. So we're going to talk about that a little bit more next week.
I happen to know a little bit about that. The World Nano Foundation is an organisation based over in Discovery Park in Sandwich.
Okay.
And they are trying to pull together a number of the organisations that are working in the new field of nanotechnology. As Jill said, we haven't got time to talk about that now because we're right at the end of the show.
It will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Next week. Indeed it will. I'd just like to say a huge thank you to the hundreds of guests we've had on today.
I would.
Yeah. Derek Taylor. Thank you. You're going to clap all of them, each and every one
Derek
of them.
Derek Taylor was trying to eat my salted caramel. I wouldn't let him.
Yeah, Steve Kilfoy and Jane Wildish. oh, for goodness sake.
You've got the giggles.
Yeah, so Karen and Adam and Jane from Rift Academy.
Lovely,
thank
Jane.
You, thank you all for joining us on the Business Monkey Show.
The fragrant studio.
Coming up later today, we have Craig Avery